All right, it is time for the final episode this season of the Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles. Welcome to it. It's Pat Steinberg along with you on the Flames Talk podcast feed. And boy, have we had a lot of fun this season. Want to say thank you, first of all season long to our title sponsors, Cumming and Gillespie LLP. All season long, been such a pleasure having you along. And as we move into the final episode of the season, a special thanks to Brent Cron and Colin Patterson as well. Just incredible jobs steering these interviews, making them fun and funny and informative, and they wouldn't have been anywhere near as good without those two guys driving the bus. So on this week's episode, we've got some things you haven't heard with some of our great guests. You're going to hear some outstanding stuff from Theo Fleury, Lanny McDonald, and Mike Vernon. They have been three of our guests on the program this year. We've also spoken to the likes of Terry Crisp, Al Coates, Doug Barkley, Hogan Lube, and more. All of our programs available on the Flames Talk podcast feed. But yeah, this week, stuff you haven't heard, stuff that was left on the cutting room floor. That's what we are focusing in on this week's episode. And before we do that, usually in this spot, we do This Week in Flames History. Just wanted to say thank you all season long to our great sponsor, Village Honda, for being on board with This Week in Flames History. But yeah, let's dive right in. And Lanny McDonald, he really is just the best. And we know what Lanny means to the Calgary Flames and the organization in hockey, but Lanny means so much to this city outside of hockey. This guy gives back so much of his time every year to make Calgary and Southern Alberta a better place, whether it's his time and work with Special Olympics Calgary or heading over to Afghanistan to be with the Canadian forces and our troops. He really is the best. And let's hear more about it right now. Lanny, Colin, Brent, let's listen into a little bit more.
Tell you a quick story. In Winnipeg, we're playing in Winnipeg halfway through the 80s, and we play an absolutely horrendous game. Verny, I'm sure.
No, Verny, you saved a lot.
Yeah. I'm sure it was
10%.
And not to stop you, I got to go to one hockey game a year. My dad would drive me in from a small southern Manitoba town. And I wanted to come in and I wanted to watch Mike Vernon, and I got to watch Rick Walmsley all the time, and I wasn't disappointed.
Thank God. I hated
Rick. But I wanted to come watch Vernie, and I got to watch Walmer.
I got mesmerized by the queen.
Yeah, oh, that monster painting, yeah.
So, anyway, after the game, we lose badly. We have played a horrendous game. And not to our credit, everyone hated playing in Winnipeg. No excuse.
The Palomino was nice, though, hey?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. It was actually very good.
But that's what the guys told me. I had never been there. Mm.
You know, I grew up there. I never set foot in that place.
Oh, yeah. Way to go. Yeah. Anyway, after the game, I think we'd lost 6-1 or whatever, played horrendous, and so was I. And after the game, we've got friends there, but there's six Special Olympic athletes there. And I'll never forget, my friends all say, "Oh, Lanny, good game, played pretty well. Tough loss."
They tell you the truth.
Yeah, they do.
No, this is like our regular, so-called friends.
Okay.
And then I had asked my Special Olympic friends just to wait so I could spend more time with them. And I'll never forget Ken, who I had met earlier that summer at Special Olympic event in, I think it was Summer Games in Winnipeg. And I get to them, and he's got five buddies, girls and guys, and introduce me, and I say hello to everyone, and he said, "What the hell happened?" And I said, "What do you mean?
What do you mean, man?"
And yeah, he
take
said,
"Take it easy." Yeah.
"Like, the team was awful, but you were bad." And I said, "Like, really? No, you were really, really
bad.
You could
have been the worst one on the ice." Yeah.
And I started to laugh, and it told you a whole lot about sport and about life.
Yep.
Like, your friends tell you you're good.
Yeah.
Your Special Olympic athletes cut through all the shit.
Just no filter, straight to the point.
And say, just this is the way it is, and you were god-awful.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah, it's so good.
I laughed. We hugged afterwards.
Yeah.
They went there. And he's like,
you are, you
mine.
Were right. You were right.
Yep.
Mac, awesome. As we wrap up here, let's talk about Afghanistan.
Oh, my God.
Going to Afghanistan, representing the Flames. And
so this guy by the name of Colin Patterson.
Well, we don't have to go there, but.
Yeah. Yeah. This guy by the name of Colin Patterson said, Mac, here's the deal. I've been to Afghanistan with 8 or 9 other guys, might have been 10, and said, you've got to come. It's the most unbelievable trip of your life. You will learn so much about teamwork, about playing for your country and defending your country. And so I said, okay, I'm in. So Patter goes for the next 2 years. I go for the next 3. We both end up going 3 years. It was a game-changing, life-changing experience to understand how good our Canadian Armed Forces are, how much they're looked up to by the rest of the world as being team players, as being people that look for a solution and find a way to be the best teammates you could ever have. And I have said all along, ever since I've been there, every team, current team, when they're not playing, should go to Afghanistan or go to our Canadian Armed Forces and find out really what it takes to be a team.
Oh, and for sure.
It was so good. I will never regret. It was one of the most emotional times of my life. I had promised my dear wife I wouldn't go outside of the wire.
You did.
I went 45 kilometers when...
Oh, that's it? That's all?
Yeah.
When, that's not that far.
When the general... 45 the general asked...
Yeah.
When the general asked, would you come with us out to 4 forward bases and let the people know that you're here and understand what they're trying to do? How do you say no? You can't. And I remember getting home that night. It was the most exhausted I have ever been. Called my dear wife, and I couldn't say a word on the phone because it was emotionally draining. And first of all, she couldn't believe I went to 4 forward bases outside.
Yeah.
But it was the most satisfying, gratifying thing I could have ever done. And I am always thankful that Patter asked if I would possibly go. And the best 3 years I could have ever spent with them.
It was unbelievable. I mean, every trip we went on was unreal. Obviously, they sent me first if he comes back. We just lost a good alumni player.
Yeah,
like, it's good.
It's like Gladiator. When they feed him the food, you got to taste the first to make sure it's not poison.
Yeah.
And if you made it through, Lanny can go.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah.
He really is the best, isn't he? Lanny McDonald, there's just a little bit of what you missed with Lanny. And let's go right from Lanny into another Hall of Famer, and that'd be Mike Vernon. Mike was the first ever guest we had on this program going all the way back. And despite 2 episodes with him, we didn't even get all of the stories in. Let's hear a little bit more from Mike Vernon with Colin Patterson and Brent Cron as he delved a little bit more into his life after hockey. Let's listen in right now.
Do you remember that at Heritage Classic game? You had to strap the pads on to play that outdoors?
Oh, yeah.
After how long? How long have you been not skating?
Since I...
Stopped playing?
Stopped playing, yeah.
Then you threw your...
So I came out a week before.
Yep. Couldn't tell.
Yeah. It was awful. I hurt my arms on both sides because I'm trying to quit. I hurt myself. And then it was only minus, what, 22, 4 yeah. or something yeah. stupid like that. The ice was brittle. They wouldn't let the Zamboni go on the ice. Because it would just torch it.
Yep.
It was cold.
And you played the whole game, right?
Sorry?
You played the whole game, right? Or did you play half?
No, I think you played...
Yes, please.
Oh, yeah. A period or something?
Yeah, I think you might have played half.
Came in or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, all I know, it was awful. And so we warm up. The boys are firing it. And then, you know the guys. They can't skate anymore, but they can still shoot a puck,
for sure.
Right?
Yeah. Yep.
And I don't have the reflexes. And I'm like, I'm yelling at them in a lineup and F off, you bastard. They're whizzing by my head. Yes. And they're chuckling and
they're having a great time. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They're loving life. And this is great.
Yeah.
We're going out for a picnic.
Let alone did Vernie know we're shooting bottom left.
Jesus, yeah. It was terrible. Yeah. It was bad and it was cold and we lost and it just, yeah. It was all bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun, though. It was a great time.
Wow.
You probably haven't put them on since, eh?
Nope.
No.
Refuse to.
Do you have any of your old gear? Is it in your garage or is it all gone?
I have some old stuff that is kind of packed away to hang on the walls.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, but most of it, I give some to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you gave any stuff to the Hall of Fame.
I do have. I have the pads from that game and the gloves.
Yeah.
And I wanted to give them, like, do a charity thing with them.
That'd be a great idea, Vern.
We should.
Yeah.
But anyway,
all was over a brand that new now. Gear too, obviously.
Brand new.
Oh, great.
Oh, yeah.
They're awesome.
You. Yeah.
Like, I look at them, I'm like, geez, why didn't Thank I have you. That when I first well, played?
You know what's funny? So, like, my old gear from 2010, and I got some new stuff. It's Markstrom's old gear. The way it's built now.
No, it's ridiculous.
Oh, man. You could pick it up between your pinky and your thumb. You could pick the whole pad up. Like, there's no weight to it whatsoever.
It's ridiculous.
Remember when Reggie tried the new pads?
He was the first guy. Him and Tommy Barrasso were the first guys.
The Aeroflex stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. They're hilarious.
I wouldn't even put them on. I can't wear that.
Yeah.
That's just wrong.
Yeah.
I should have.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was really neat. I mean, to see that evolution of the game.
And then Reggie left Calgary and went to Boston and continued his career.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
Great guy.
Oh, he's an unbelievable guy, too. He was another guy in my career that was very helpful.
Yeah.
They paired me with him all the time.
Yeah.
But he was an unbelievable guy.
I was going to ask you your relationship with Reggie. Like
yeah, it was always good.
Yeah.
And even when I got called up and Reggie was, you know, him and Mark Moore or whatever, and he'd always say, Vernie, you just keep going. And it's not about, it's not you. You keep going. And it's me and the organization. You just keep playing.
Do your thing.
Huh? Yeah. So he was an unbelievable guy. And a guy that, you know, you could have a beer with or go play golf with, or he's just a really nice guy.
Yeah, and you
easy going.
Yeah, like you see the level of competition and guys. You know, sometimes you know there's guys that's trying to sabotage you, get in your way, set you up for failure. It's nice to hear. Like there's like you guys are both talking about positive people in your career, right? Like Lanny being a great leader, Reggie. You know, just say, hey, whatever's going on with between me and the team, that's between me and the team. You just do your thing, and we're here to support you. Like that stuff. That's crazy. That's selfless stuff. That's just awesome teammates.
Yeah. It just shows the, you know, the credit to the individual.
Yeah, right? 100%.
And a lot of guys in hockey are like that.
Yep.
And that's why the game is such a great game.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think Calgary, we had a ton of those guys that prepare, you know, and I think all the guys that played in Calgary prepared the next generation to play.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's what you want.
Yep.
That's what you need.
Well, that's kind of the culture they built, right?
Yeah. Yep.
In Calgary, Cliff Fletcher, and that's what they, when they first got here, that's the culture they started in breeding into you type thing. So
leave the place better than when you found it type thing, right? Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
I think Cliff's philosophy, you know, he came from Montreal, so it was a lot of what Montreal would do, right? Yeah. And bring guys up through the system.
Yeah.
And not just go pluck them from somewhere else. Yeah, he did that too.
Yeah.
But a lot of guys came through the system.
Yeah.
They were drafted. They came through the system.
Yeah.
We got them in shape. We got them to believe in what we're doing here, yeah. and you build that culture.
Yeah.
And it's no different than the Flames now. Ryan Huskoff is doing a great job. Yeah. He's a great coach, and he's got those guys playing.
Good yeah. person.
Like, but he's got that culture
yeah.
in that room.
Yeah.
And makes it a lot easier, man.
No kidding.
You know what? I love what Craig's doing too. I go.
Oh yeah. Well, Craig too. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. It's all of the management and things like that. Yeah. But you know, the coach is the guy that's.
Yeah.
He's talks the about systems. Guy. Talk about all of that. Put the lines together. Craig probably doesn't have a lot to do with that, yeah. but Craig has a lot to do with the personnel that's there.
Yeah.
And they're bringing in guys, and it's I look at it's. I think it's surprised the whole league.
Yeah,
what sure. the Calgary Flames are doing.
Yep.
Probably hasn't surprised Connie.
Yep.
And it probably hasn't surprised Huskoff either.
Yeah.
Because that's what they expect.
Yeah.
And the players, I think, believe in themselves.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, I was at a function on Thursday. I don't know, while they had some time off and things like that. And then I went to a little bar and... I think their whole team walked in.
Really?
After the U.S.-Canada game.
Yeah, yeah.
They came by, said hi, and they just went. They come by, Vernie. And you guys just go yep. have your time. But that's what it's about. They were all hanging out together.
All of them.
Having a beer, yeah.
All of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's the important nice. Part, right?
Yeah. yeah.
Right? So you just see, you know, how well they get along. I know they go down to Mercado all the time for their pregame, and they're all there.
Yeah, all of them.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's a good atmosphere I think they're in
for sure.
So
yeah, we know that, right? You know the culture. That culture's a huge thing.
Culture's everything.
Yeah,
if you don't have it, you have nothing.
Yeah, oh man,
doesn't matter how good the players
doesn't
are.
Doesn't matter at all, right? Agreed.
And there's just a little bit more with the Hall of Famer Mike Vernon as we are rolling through the final episode this season of the Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles. Usually in this space, we do Flames trivia for you. Just wanted to say thanks all season long to OSY Rentals for being partners with us on Flames trivia. More of our final episode of the season as we continue. Stay with us. Hey, it's the final episode of the season, the Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles, available on the Flames Talk podcast feed. It's Pat Steinberg along with you. Thanks for being along with us. And yeah, it's our final episode of the season, so we're bringing you some of what you haven't heard on the prior episodes with some of our outstanding guests, and that includes Theron Fleury, and that's where we're going now. And wanted to say another special thanks to the Garrison Pub for hosting all of our interviews, and they have taken such great care of us, such a great spot to hang out, have great conversations with your friends, which is exactly what this show is all about. So the Garrison Pub was the perfect spot for us. Make sure you check them out. Also, Where Are They Now has been in this spot all season long, and thanks to Pure Chem Services for bringing you Where Are They Now all season. But Theo Fleury, we all know about the book, right? After hockey, Theo wrote Playing with Fire and really started advocating for victims of sexual abuse. And a few years later, he started the Breaking Free Foundation. And that's what we're going to hear about now. How did it all come to be? How did the Breaking Free Foundation turn into what it is now? Let's hear from Theo, and let's hear from Breaking Free Foundation Board Chair Amber Craig in conversation with Brent Cron and Colin Patterson. That's where we're going right now.
2009, I write this book.
Before you get writing a book, how scary is that?
It's scary.
It's terrifying. It's scary. I mean,
it's scary.
I can't imagine. I have your book at home. I'm sitting there thinking, if I'm going to just dump everything out there, I'm like, I'm just going to run now. Like, I don't want to see anybody. Right? Get me off the grid. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, for me, it was a great way to just kind of tell the world this is what happened, right? Because I kind of disappeared.
Yep.
Like, 1 year I'm in Chicago, the next year I'm like,
yep.
I didn't tell anybody, didn't call my agent, didn't call the Blackhawks, you know? And so...
Where's Theo?
You know, I thought it was important to, you know, put this all on paper and just put it out there. And, but what happened was... is, you know, I found my tribe by writing that book. Yep. Because as soon as the book came out, you know, I got bombarded by people who, you know, would come up to me and say, hey, you know, I read your book. You told my story, me too. Hey, I saw your documentary. You told my story, me too. So something that I thought was uncommon, and I thought I was the only person in the world that this was happening to.
I was alone.
Basically, like I said, I found my tribe. And so I didn't really believe the stat at the time, which was 1 in 3 girls, 1 in 5 boys before the age of 18 would have some sort of unwanted sexual experience. I didn't believe it. And after going across country on the book tour, I realized that it was a real stat, and maybe there was just as many boys as girls who were having this experience. And so I was like, we need to shine a bigger light on this so we get more people coming out and sharing what happened to them. And so I called my buddy up one day and I said, listen, and he's a Serbian guy, and I met him through our kids playing soccer together, and he went through the Serbian-Croatia, you know, war. And so he experienced some trauma in his life as well. But I called him up and I said, hey, do you want to go on a walk? And he's like, at 8:30 at night, he said? I said, no. I said, I want to walk from Toronto to Ottawa to bring awareness around the subject of child sexual abuse. So went to a whole bunch of corporate people and I said, I need like 10 grand to go do this thing. Got $0 because we're using the word sexual abuse in the marketing stuff. And they were like, well, sexual abuse doesn't affect my company. I'm like, yeah, 1 out of every 4 people that work for you have had this experience. No, they haven't. No, they haven't. So I'm like, okay. So go, remember Kaylee's in the south there? It's now the pizza place.
Yep.
So we rented that place out. I sold $100 hamburgers. We raised 12 grand, got 8 of my friends, 2 Winnebagos. We went to Toronto, and I basically walked for 10 days to bring awareness to the subject of child sexual abuse without, like, zero expectations, nothing, you know. Just let's just go on a walk and see what happens. And so basically walked 10 marathons for 10 days. So 26 miles a day for 10 days to get from Toronto to Ottawa. And every day people would drive up, pull over on the side of the road, get out of their cars, and, you know, their heads would be buried in the pavement. And you could tell that, you know, they were shy. And so they would approach me and, you know, I'd look at them in the eyes and put my arm around, and they would tell me their story, right? And it was like, it was life changing for everybody that was on the walk. Like, our lives will never be the same. It was that emotional, powerful, you know, incredible. And we did little rallies in each little town along the way. But what was incredible was when we got to Ottawa, on the front steps of Parliament, there was like 5,000 survivors wearing orange t-shirts, which is our color for our foundation. And it was incredible to be in a space with that many survivors and people who, you know, had that courage to, you know, be a part of this. But what happened was we did sister walks all over the country while we were arriving on the front steps of Parliament. So at the same time, there was a rally in Calgary, and there was a girl I'd never met had volunteered to run the Victor Walk in Calgary. And after her experience, she wrote this blog, and somebody sent it to me and said, you need to read this blog. And so I read this blog and I was like blown away. And I'm like, I got to meet this girl. And so the girl is right here, Amber Craig. And so her and I and Kim met for coffee, and we decided we were going to start this Breaking Free Foundation, and here we are. How many years later? Is it 10?
10.
Is it 10 now? Holy cow. But Amber told this incredible story about her own experience with sexual abuse, and so we, for the last 10 years, we've been supporting not only sexual abuse survivors, but everybody who's experienced, you know, trauma in their life, and providing a space, providing therapy, you know, an ear to listen to, you know, whatever it is. And, you know, it's been a wonderful 10 years, and it's been, you know, like, we've actually saved lives, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know how many foundations out there who actually save lives, but we actually save lives. And that's, to me, that's what it's all about, you know? I saved my life 19 years ago, and so, you know, I'm just paying it forward now, and hopefully, you know, providing a safe space and a safe environment, because, you know, I've been doing this for a long time, and I believe that trauma is at the core of every single issue we have in society. Starts with unresolved trauma. And what that trauma does is it leaves you in emotional pain and suffering. And what is emotional pain and suffering? Mental illness. So how do we deal with the mental illness? Well, we gravitate towards the dark side of life and get involved in addictive behavior as a coping mechanism to suppress the emotional pain and scars that are left behind from traumatic experiences. And so this is the world that we're living in today, is we have a mental health crisis, we have an addiction crisis, but we also have an unresolved trauma crisis. And at the Breaking Free Foundation, we feel that we do trauma better than anybody on the planet.
You've introduced Amber, and I'm going to look over at you. How do you fit into all this?
Yeah, I mean, kind of exactly what Theo said is how we initially met. I ran the Sister Walk in Calgary, and I don't think Theo really gets enough credit for what that book really meant for a lot of people. Like, it's, you know, talking about it earlier, just how terrifying it would be to write a story like that. But at that time, nobody was really talking about anything like that publicly. So I volunteered knowing that I was a survivor, but I hadn't actually told anybody yet.
Yeah.
And even at the rally, I still thought it was crazy that anybody was talking about it. Like, I didn't know these people.
Yeah.
And I just decided to do it. It was very public because there was a lot of media surrounding what he was doing in Ottawa. So my story was in the Calgary Herald and all over the news. And that's how a lot of my friends and family found out, which was unfortunate. But the fortunate part was, you know, what came after that, which is that we ended up meeting and having this realization that there is an epidemic of child sexual abuse survivors. But, you know, more to Theo's point, it's trauma in general.
Yep.
And side effects are really all the same. And there wasn't at the time any group that existed that was focusing on trauma, and there actually still isn't. Like, most of the people that find us tell us that they found us because they Googled PTSD in Alberta, and we're the only thing that shows up.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah.
Where did you find the courage?
Truly, I mean, apart from, like, reading Theo's story and, like, realizing that, especially being a professional hockey player, like, how much courage that would have taken. At the rally in Calgary, there was a lot of people there, but there was a woman who was there with her daughter, and her daughter was abused by her dad. And they both stood up and told this story, and, like, no tears and just a lot of strength. And that's what made me change my mind, because I just couldn't believe that there was this child sitting there who was so brave to say that her dad was abusing her, and I'm sitting there, like, afraid to tell my own friends and family. And that's really the reason that I decided to share. But I'm really grateful, because it was like the first day of the rest of my life.
Did you share before you joined the Breaking Free and holding the Sister Walk and all that kind of stuff? I just, you just Never. Started doing it, and then
I think everyone just, and I convinced myself, like, what a great volunteer opportunity.
Yeah.
We get to be involved with CO Flurry. Like,
yeah, that's awesome.
How cool
yeah.
for us. But
agreed.
I still had no plans to share. And even the woman who was coordinating with me, who I had not met, she had just recently told her husband, and he left her because he couldn't handle it. And I thought, why are you doing this? Like, why would you tell anybody?
Yeah.
And so if it wasn't for that woman and her daughter sharing, I don't know if I would have, but, you know, there's huge power in that. But I had never said anything before that day.
So then we started doing walks every year. So we were in Saskatchewan, in Estevan, Saskatchewan.
Yeah.
We pull up at the subway. Who gets out of a rental car? This dude.
Old Patter. Yeah.
And I was like, what the hell are you doing here? He's like, oh, I'm just here to support you.
Yeah.
And I thought, because really nobody at that point in the Flames organization had kind of really knew what we were doing. And obviously Patter knew what we were doing. And he shows up in Estevan. I'm like, are you working out here or nothing? He says, no, I booked a flight, flew to Regina, rented a car and drove here. And, you know, that's, Patter doesn't get enough credit, but he is one of the greatest human beings you've ever met in your life. He's a great teammate and continues to be an incredible teammate to everybody involved in the Calgary Flames alumni. And he's, you know, a very special board member that we have here at the Breaking Free Foundation, has been, you know, a great teammate, has raised a lot of money for, you know, the different stuff that we do at the Breaking Free. So it's been incredible.
What has the Breaking Free Foundation meant to you over the years? Like being able to give back ever, like, you know, the courage that both you speak about, CO, just about, you feel like you're alone. You feel like nobody else is there for you. You're the only one going through this, and you find out more and more. And unfortunately, it's way too common, right? Mm-hmm. That you have a lot of similarities with people that you can communicate without even talking, you know, right? Yeah. How has this helped you heal? How has this helped you move forward?
Well, I'm not dead.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, truly, like, both of us have survived a suicide attempt. Like, my first attempt, I was 12.
Wow.
So I had a lifetime of pain and suffering and not exactly what you're saying. Nobody, when you're in it and no one talks about it, you actually think this is some crazy thing that no one's ever been through, and then you say something and so many people in your circle tell you that the same thing happened to them. Yeah. And it's a domino effect, and I'm very grateful because I don't even recognize the person that I was 10 years ago when we started this. In every which way, I've done so much healing, and now the important thing for me is that there's a lot of people who still need to find their voice, and for a lot of people that come to us, they've already done a lot of other things that, you know, hit a lot of roadblocks or walls. Yeah. and for them to just find a community where people don't have any judgment and can talk about this stuff openly can actually be life-saving. Like, that's not a dramatic statement to make. That's truly what we experience, and that's worth all the time in the world.
Yeah. How big, or big might be a poor term, but how much has the Breaking Free Foundation grown from day one till 10 years today?
Well, I mean, it's crazy, you know, because we have, what, 300 people on the waiting list. And maybe, Amber, talk about what we do for people.
Yeah, so we run two kind of primary programs. One is a therapy grant program, which allows people who have PTSD or CPTSD to apply for $750 grants.
And sorry, what's CP?
Complex PTSD.
Complex PTSD. Okay.
And actually, that, even in the last 10 years, has gotten way more airtime. All that means is that you have repeated trauma or multiple traumas. So actually the majority of people that we work with fall into the CPTSD category. So they can apply for $750 towards trauma specialized treatment, whether that's talk therapy or equine therapy or art therapy, energy healing. We have over 400 therapists in Alberta that we work with.
You said equine. Is that Dodger? Is Dodger, like Brent Dodger?
Yeah, he has an equine therapy place too. Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah.
It's where the horse is your therapist. And it's incredible how intuitive horses are. And, you know, combined with a really good therapist.
Yeah.
Like, I've done some amazing healing stuff with horses.
I mean, and we're going to expand on it, but how does that work? I mean, Brent Dodgenhorst, I've talked to him about that. What's that process like doing equine therapy? Like how do you even...
It's very... I'm not going to, like, speak out of turn because I'm not as a therapist, but we work with lots of different therapists who work with horses, and they all have a different, you know, take on it. And I think that's... So it looks different for everybody. I've
seen
a bit of it myself, and I can't really truly explain it because there's no way to explain it. It's honestly, it's life-changing. It's hard to describe, but I think that's like a lot of trauma therapy when you find something that hits.
Yep. It's what you're saying is it's not the same for everybody, right?
Right. So use the example of, like, you have a dog. And it doesn't matter what kind of day you've had. You come home, that dog is like 100% unconditional love. Well, the horses are the same. They can feel your energy. And so when you stand beside a horse in his energy, the horse knows exactly what's wrong with you right away. And then the horse plays against your trauma and you act it out and people observe what's going on. And then you eventually get to the place you need to get to.
Yeah.
There's no explanation of how it works. It just works every single time.
Yeah.
And it's powerful. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Like my wife, who's nonverbal, she doesn't like to talk or whatever.
Yeah.
That's her favorite thing to do because she doesn't have to.
Doesn't have to.
The horse does all the. Yeah.
Almost the heavy lifting of that. I don't mean to be disrespectful, but it's like, you know, you go there and it's.
Yeah. That's why animals are so important.
Yeah.
Is because they see stuff that not everybody can see.
And pardon me, I should have maybe done a bit more research, and this might be a bit of an ignorant question, but like in terms of centers wise, where do people go to get this treatment through the Breaking Free Foundation?
So it's dependent on, so when they receive a grant from us, they get to choose from one of the nearly 500 therapists that we vetted in Alberta, or they can bring one to us and we'll go through the process to make sure they're properly trained. And then they just meet those people where they work.
Okay.
So we don't have a facility. We don't have staff. We don't have anything.
Yeah.
We're volunteer run. We're very.
You're looking at three quarters.
three quarters.
Of the
business. This is the business right here.
Pretty much it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's accessible to people. We work in, 40 different municipalities, and then we have virtual therapists as well.
Yeah.
So we're very accessible to anyone in Alberta, but depending on what speaks to you and what you think is going to work for you, you would just go to that place and work with that therapist.
So kind of back to my earlier question about when you started going out on a limb, doing everything just because you wanted to, not because you're just trying to help people. You're not really concerned with where this goes. It's like, I'm doing this. This is what we're doing. This is how we're getting there, and we're going to get there at some point.
Well, there's a spiritual piece to this too.
Yeah,
you know,
it's healing for you too. It's healing for you, everybody, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, the core thing of any 12-step group is service.
Yeah.
Right. If you do service, you're further away from a drink. You're further away from a drug. You're involved in your community, you're helping people. Well, this is no different.
Yeah.
The model is still the same, right? And the more people I've helped through their example or whatever, the better I get.
Yeah.
Right? Because I see myself at a year in recovery and go, holy cow.
Yeah.
And look at how far I've come. Look at how much I've accomplished over that time. So you always need that example of somebody at some place where you used to be who is no longer in that place and they're thriving and life's good. Their relationships are repaired, you know, all of these things. And that's really what therapy is all about, is about, you know, getting to the core of what this trauma is and then taking a look at the trauma and finding the gift in the trauma experience so that you can now share that experience with another survivor, right?
I'm gonna ask you first, I'm gonna ask you, did you think you'd ever get here today?
Oh, there's lots of times, yeah. Especially when you got a fully loaded gun in your mouth, you know what I mean? But that's where we go, right? I don't even know what the stat is on men who've been sexually abused, but it's pretty high rate of suicide.
of men who've been sexually abused who don't get the help that they need. It's a very high percentage. I can't remember what it is, but you know, scary stuff, right?
What stopped you from
God?
Yeah.
My belief in something greater than myself.
Yeah.
You know, I choose to call mine God, but you know, it's whatever. You know, whatever it is, you know. You know, the third step in 12 step is came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity.
Yeah.
Because I was insane.
Yeah.
And I needed to be restored to sanity. And 19 years, that's happened. Right? You know? Because I'm sitting in a bar and I have no desire.
Yeah.
No desire to have a drink.
Yeah.
Because if I drink, I'm dead.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's as simple as that. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, I've built this incredible life, this amazing life. And you know, I've been able to repair a lot of relationships that were, you know, a direct result of me causing another person trauma.
Yeah.
And I've been able to sit down, apologize, make amends, and, you know, that kind of stuff. And that's really what this whole thing is all about, is repairing relationships. Right? Because trauma happens in relationship. So in order for me to heal that trauma from those relationships, I need to get better at relationships and help heal myself. Right? It's that simple. It's not rocket science.
Amber, same question to you. Did you think you'd ever get here to this point in your life today?
No, but I didn't know what I was dealing with my whole life, because there was no education for me at any point in my life, in school or networks or anything, to really tell me that what I had gone through was what it was.
Yeah.
So my whole life, I just thought I was a problem child. I thought I was just different. I thought I was hopeless. So I really didn't care if I was dead or alive, because I didn't think I had value. So I didn't really know what the goal was. I just thought, this is how I am, and it's really unfortunate, and I'll probably die at some point, and it's fine. But, you know, the more that I've learned and grown, I mean, again, it's like, it's so weird to look back and think that that's the same person.
And what stopped you? Like, stopped all that negative to help you move forward? Is there something that you can think of where you're just like that?
Well, you find a new purpose in life, right? You know, like, you know, I always tell the story of the very first book signing, where the guy comes up, puts the book on the table, looks me in the eye, and says, "Me too."
Yeah.
Well, that was a life changer.
Yeah.
You know, that I was well enough and awake enough to know that this was a sign from God delivering me a message, basically saying, "Listen, pal, this is what you're going to do for the rest of your life. You're going to empower other survivors to come forward with their story."
Yep.
Right? That's what it was about, right? And then that's what I knew. I was like, "Oh, I have a new purpose in life."
Yeah.
And then I run into Amber, and we do this together, and Kim, and like
the family grows.
Yeah, like,
right?
You know, there's a great saying, you know, when the student's ready, the teacher appears.
Yeah.
And in my life, especially the last 20 years, whenever I've needed something, the teacher has always appeared.
Yeah.
To teach me the next thing that I need to learn, to the next thing, to the next thing, to the next thing, right? And that's how you go from complete and utter despair of, I don't want to be here, to now thriving and having a purpose and a reason to get out of bed every day, instead of, you know, succumbing to depression and anxiety and all these mental health disorders are out now, or the addiction.
Yeah.
I'm not going to succumb to the addiction, right? Today I'm not going to drink. Tomorrow, maybe.
Yeah.
But today I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so you start to build strength as you go along this journey. And the journey is only one day at a time. Yep. That's it.
Yeah.
That's all it is. And, you know, I've strung together 7,113 days of continuous sobriety because it's one day at a time. That's it. Right. And the goal is to be better today than I was yesterday, whatever that looks like to you.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And that's what we try to teach the people that come into our organization who are looking for help, is that there is hope. You can overcome whatever obstacle it is, whether that's mental illness or addiction or anger or resentment or whatever it is you're using as your coping mechanism,
yep,
you can overcome it, right?
Patter, what is this Breaking Free Foundation meant to you?
Well, you know, I mean, the fact that I can help Theo out, like, we sat beside each other for 2 years in the dressing room. I never knew the issues and things that he had gone through. So I always said, hey, if I can ever help him out, I'll help him out. And it just turned that, you know, when they were doing their Victor walk through Saskatchewan, I just went, you know, I was following them on Instagram and I said, you know what, it looks like they're getting tired. Maybe they need some help. So that's when I jumped on a plane and went out there. And you know, and since then, I've been fortunate enough to, you know, jump on the board and help out. We've gone from a much bigger board of like 13 people where sometimes, you know, you get too many people on the board, doesn't happen. And now we're down to four, and we accomplish a lot for a small group. Obviously, we'd
love to
raise more money.
Well, and all the money goes exactly to where it's supposed to go, and that's to the people that need the help, you know.
And Amber is unbelievable. Theo is unbelievable. I go, it's, you know, and we have another guy, Wade, who helped, you know, is on the board, and he does a great job too. We all sort of pitch in, and just when you think, you know, hey, we're running low on funds, we have an event or
show up.
We get a donation or something happens, right?
We'd love to
try and get, you know, out in front of it a little more.
Yeah.
But it's tough. I mean, we're just a small organization.
Well, and that was the thing. We were just trying to fill a small niche market in the mental health space, and we have 300 people on our waiting list waiting to get in for therapy, and we're providing a small niche.
And the reason we have 300 because we capped it.
Yeah,
you know, because you don't want to. I mean, we could be probably 500.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But Amber's done an unbelievable job with a podcast that maybe you can chat about, because I think it's really
the podcast and the meetups.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I'll talk about the meetups first because that's what started the podcast. But the meetups is the other thing that we kind of do, which is they're free support meetings that we do twice a month. One's in Calgary and one is online. So anybody can join that. And it's very informal. It's just a place to have a conversation. And again, for people who feel like no one understands them, it's a place to realize that everyone in the room does. It's a bunch of strangers that will quickly become your family because they've been through everything you've been through. And so, you know, when it was becoming a little bit hard to get people engaged in that, started inviting some therapists that we work with to come to meetups and sort of answer questions or talk about different types of therapy that exists or different types of trauma. And because people can't make it out every time, someone suggested you should record these conversations so that we can listen to them anytime. So hence, we started the podcast called Elephant in the Room, which is interviews with therapists that we work with. They all specialize in trauma, but each episode is about a very specific kind of trauma or a specific kind of therapy, and it's become a really good resource for our community, where now that's how we start our meetups. Did anyone hear the last episode?
Yep.
What came to mind? Do you have any questions? And actually, we get a lot of emails from therapists that work with us who are like, I didn't know about this. I'm actually going to take some training, or I want to learn more about this. And even for myself, who I feel like I'm in it all the time, I still have so much more to learn, and it's, it's been an exciting experience.
It's just, this stuff just blows, you know what I mean? It just all started from, let's go
on a walk.
Yeah. You want to go for a walk tonight?
It's very easy going here. When you know, flip the page and you go, you know, I was never exposed to stuff like this growing up. And I go, then you start hearing about it and you start realizing, you go, wow.
Yeah.
You know, how many kids that, you know, I went to school with or knew that had issues that you go, oh, they were just acting out or whatever happened.
Well,
and there's something, right? There's some drama behind it.
How about when we went to the prison in Drumheller?
Oh, yeah. It was wild.
Opening experience, eh?
Yeah. So Theo got up and spoke. You know, and I was in amongst the people in the prison, and
he's sitting with the inmates.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you could feel like the two guys beside me, you could feel the rage in them.
Yeah.
And then one of the guys, I said, you know, hey, do you want to go meet Theo after? And he did. And, you know, he came over and thanked me.
Yeah.
You know, but because they've all got this trauma, you know, people don't wake up going, hey, I want to, you know, hurt somebody, or I want to do this and, you know, end up in jail.
Yeah.
You know, there's lots of things, you know, lead up peeling the onion, right?
Yeah.
Well,
It's like I said, we have an unresolved trauma crisis on the planet. And, you know, when I'm out on the road, all I see is pain and suffering. That's it. In every audience, every person that approaches me, all I see is pain and suffering. And that's a direct result of experienced trauma in your life. And then not even knowing where to start, right? And we think the first way to start is by writing a book, yep, telling your secret, yep, you know, standing up in front of a whole bunch of strangers and saying, hey, I'm a survivor of sexual abuse. You know what I mean? So, you know, it does take a lot of courage, but, you know, I've seen so many reveals and you can almost see their whole entire cellular system completely change when they say either me too, I'm a survivor, yeah, I've been sexually abused. You can actually see their molecular structure change. Yeah. Right? It's so rewarding. Like, it's so incredibly rewarding. And, you know, it's just, there's a reason why I went through what I went through. That's all I can, you know, make sense. Yeah. It's the only reason that makes sense to me is God gave me this struggle. And he gave me adversity early on in my life, which then created resilience. Yeah. And then once you have resilience, there isn't anything that anybody can do that has already been done to you, yeah, that's going to be way worse.
Yeah.
And so you just keep overcoming stuff, yeah, because you're not afraid, right?
Yeah.
And fear is what keeps all of this fear of judgment, fear of people, you know, gossip, you know, all that stuff and judgment, you know. And so it takes a leap of faith where you go, you know what, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired, and I need to get this off my chest, because if I don't, I'm probably gonna die.
Yeah.
And that's where we're at with trauma.
Yeah.
Right.
And how many times, how many hockey players have you played with, how many friends have you had over the course of a lifetime that have, you know, passed on or what, and you had no, and you, they were your best friend, or they, yep, you knew them so well,
yep,
and at the end of the day, like, I feel like I didn't even know the guy.
Yeah.
Like, if I would have known, I mean, it's selfish, yeah, at the end of the day, if I would have known, it would have helped, but yeah, you don't, and you feel alone, right?
Yeah. But that's the society we've created, and so in order, you know, you talk about stigma, well, that's the stigma,
yeah,
is I can't talk about the most difficult things in society. And that's the reason why we have an opioid crisis, fentanyl crisis. That's why we have, you know, a mental health crisis, is because we've created a society that says you can't talk about this.
Yep.
Right. And so what we try to do is we try to break that. I hate the word stigma. Break that cycle of, you know, don't be silent.
Yeah.
Speak about it. Use your,
yeah,
voice,
yeah,
right? The old throat chakra,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Am I missing anything? Have I hit points? Am I missing anything about the foundation at all? Is there anything you guys want to bring up in terms of, you know, like I said, I've done some homework, but I'm sure I'm missing a few things.
Well, 300 people on the waiting list times 750 is what, 250 grand? So we need 250 grand to get all those people through, yeah, therapy.
And
I guarantee you, out of those 300 people, you're probably going to save 30 lives.
Yeah.
Like, save them.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the stat, isn't it, now? What are we at? Seven? You had a stat that came out a while ago about our program. How?
Oh, I don't know which one you're talking about, but.
Just give us
some. To do with the therapy grant, yeah, programs.
Oh, I like 76% of people that go through the program, like they see a massive improvement in their mental health.
Yeah.
We do get a lot of letters from people that say that it was life saving or life changing. But I mean, a big pinch point for us right now is that we receive a lot of referrals from other organizations like Alberta Health Services. Yeah, RCMP are sending us, yeah, people now too. Like, it's tough.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. So we must be doing something right, okay, right? You know what I mean? So
Yeah.
And thing is, you know, for people to donate, they can do it a few different ways. And it you know, it's like anything. It doesn't take a lot of money, but, it, you know, we understand every dollar makes a difference. But, you know, if people got onto a system where they go, hey, I'm going to give you $5 a month.
Yeah.
Might not sound like a lot, but over, you know, 5 years, all of a sudden.
It adds up.
Adds up. And, you know, we get enough people
to get a lot of people donating $5 a month. That catches up real fast, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, get involved in our events. We do golf tournament in the summer, poker every once in a while. Amber puts on little events, art stuff and all that stuff. So, yeah, and every single dollar goes to those people and provides them therapy grants and gives them hope and, you know, yeah.
And so we're also on
Social media.
Social media.
Yeah.
Our podcast is on Spotify or YouTube, and then we're on Instagram.
The best story is, though, is when the three of us met at the Starbucks on 90th Avenue. It's no longer there. We're having this conversation, and I look, and all three of us were wearing elephants. And so they all...
Not by design.
No, we just showed up, and I'm like, you have an elephant? She has a... So the elephant is the mascot for our foundation. But when you do the research on elephants, it was like perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. And then the elephant in the room.
And then the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So.
Oh, man.
Crazy stuff.
Jeez. This has been great.
Yeah.
Go to our website.
BreakingFreeFoundation.ca. Send us an email at contact@BreakingFreeFoundation. Yeah.
All right, that was Theo Fleury. That was Breaking Free Foundation Board Chair Amber Craig. And that was just a little bit of what you weren't able to hear when we released the Theron Fleury episode earlier this season on the Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles. And thought it was really important for you to hear a little bit more of that message. And that starts to wrap us up on this episode, which means it also starts to wrap us up on this season of the Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles, and thanks to Cumming and Gillespie LLP one more time for being our title sponsor all year. Thanks to all the alumni members for hanging out with us. Thanks to Brent Cron. Thanks to Colin Patterson. And of course, thanks to you for listening and hanging out with us. It's been a blast as we wrap up this season of the Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles.